Nash being chased, and they had him. Oh, look out. As Ori sent Nash flying, and Bell goes at Ori. Nash got up. He wants to go at Ori. The Suns did not appreciate the foul by Robert Ori.
Robert Ori.
I'm good, but I probably should. Prove it to you, or else you could just pass me off.
And every time I do this, every time we get good content after I say, oh, I'll see you, Doc, and hit stop, I'm thinking, what? Until I shut the fucking laptop, should keep recording?
That's what I do.
Yeah, no, it's like,
because
sometimes I see your files and it's like 15 minutes because you wander off and watch some racing and
go for shit.
Just keeps recording. See you drinking beer in the background. Oh, dude.
Speaking of which.
Yeah.
Tasty, tasty beverage.
The edits coming out of Ferrite, which is the application I'm using on the iPad, are pretty good, I think.
Yeah, that went all right.
They've actually got a couple of, because it's a podcast editing app, that's what it's for. It's not a sort of, you know, it's not like a big, heavy professional audio editing program. It's a podcasting program. It has some really cool stuff like strip silence. So, you know, you can strip out the silence to a certain dB level. So it get, like, you basically get rid of all the sighs and hums and creaks in the background when someone's not talking, which is nice because I do a lot of that shit.
But that's the character of the show. That's literally
that's right.
What the show's for.
Yeah, well, it doesn't remove clinking, so that's all that matters.
Well, it doesn't remove. Can it remove shit internet?
No. So I had a big deep think about the NBA and how it related to several other sports and the way that the NBA is progressive, and I'm not talking about the NFL sort of progressive, which I'm sure we'll get to later. Because at that stage, like when I was sort of putting this thesis together, that was when it looked like the conference finals were going to be really boring and not much was going to happen. And it seems to have changed in the last couple of days.
No, really exciting finals matchup looking. The Washington Caps versus the Vegas Golden Knights. Who do you like in that? Oh, NBA. Oh, shit. Oh, sorry. I thought this was a hockey podcast. Actually, that hockey shit's weird. I know that you were commenting earlier in the week about these NBA fans who'd given up on it and were saying, oh, the hockey's more interesting. But the hockey is fucking... I mean, well, it's still hockey, so it's unwatchable on a television, but the narrative around it is fascinating.
A tortured fan base versus... is this a first-year expansion team?
Yeah, so this is the... On one side, the Washington Capitals, the most tortured fan base pretty much in hockey that isn't one of the Canadian teams. Because this is the funny thing. Canada haven't won the Stanley Cup for, like, fucking a generation, which is hilarious. None of the Canadian teams have won anything. But the Washington Caps are the most cursed franchise in the NHL. Versus literally a first-year expansion team in Las Vegas who were set up using leftover players from that weren't wanted from other clubs. Literally, the owners and GMs said, look, we might win in 3-5 years, but we're not going to win this year.
Mm.
They're in the fucking Stanley Cups.
Where did the Storm come their first year in the comp?
Oh, that's a good bet. I mean, they obviously didn't win, but
they had a pretty good side. They would have had Lazarus.
They didn't make the playoffs, but of our Storm freakout type fans who remembers back to '98 could probably tell you that. But that's a good chat because then again, those players were all the leftovers, but from a fairly high tier.
They'd made some. The NRL was smart enough to let them, let them recruit sort of decent players, I guess.
Well, they were the most. I mean, they were the core of them were the Hunter Mariners, who just won the World Club Challenge, or been beaten in the final by the Broncos or something along those lines. But there was actually a really good. It was basically all of the Hunter players who weren't playing for Newcastle at the time. All your Brett Camorleys and that cluster of players. So they're all, you know, massively talented players. But I think the one of the things that was that has been said about this is that, oh, okay, they started from scratch, but that's actually can be a little bit of an advantage because in NHL they've got a salary cap, but they don't have the contracts tend to be quite long, you know, eight years and lots of money. So actually starting off with a nice clean situation means you don't have any cap baggage that you're bringing along with you. So they had a good opportunity to really, really set the tone. Ironically, the GM of this Vegas startup side was the GM of the Washington side.
Oh,
and he got
right.
let go because they'd kind of, they kept getting only so far and kept falling over. And the team is basically the team that he built. So he is sitting in the box watching, you know, both of his teams play against each other, which must be interesting times. But this is not a hockey podcast because
The Storm for the in their first year did make the finals and lost to the Broncos, who were the premiers that year, in the finals. And their sort of their big four the first year was Robbie Ross, Lazarus, Kamali, and Scott Hill.
And I imagine Robbie Kearns and fucking et cetera, et cetera. Matt Geyer, he would have been there.
Who was their roids prop they had as well?
That was Robbie Ross.
No, Robbie Ross was
a fullback. Needles Howe.
Rodney Howe. Seems quite quaint, someone's shooting up steroids now.
Yeah, so that's old. Was he actually shooting up or was he on early peptides?
Oh, no, yeah, gym stuff, supplements or whatever. I do find it hilarious that one rugby union player has been suspended for cocaine use. I just find that the funniest fucking story.
Well, only one. B, yeah. Straight away afterwards, there's this massive sob story piece that's been leaked to the media about how, you know, it's family tragedy and he's depressed and all this sort of stuff. And I'm thinking, guarantee Wendell Saylor wouldn't have got this. When he got the boot for cocaine, he didn't have didn't get the full the puff piece to try and justify, you know.
Well,
of course, he's either had a family tragedy or it's mental illness. It can't be some personal fuck ups.
I've always admired stuff and just going on a rampage and going, well, you know, this time I was out in Sydney in a club with these nine other wallabies and we snorted cocaine off our hooker's tits, you know, because for sure he's got those stories. And he sort of went back to league in terms of any work that he did or any involvement he did. Like, he has nothing to do with reunion now. So it would have been quite easy for him to burn the hammer. But yeah, I think I always thought they treated him really shabbily considering the value they got from him.
Yeah.
Like, he wasn't the best player, but man, I think he made them some dollars. And like,
that's
he had
true.
Awesome
all of the high profile players they bring across that aren't really rugby union people. I mean, you look at the way Quade Cooper's been treated over the years. He wasn't sort of one of them, partly because he was a Kiwi and partly because he didn't go to the right sort of, you know, he wasn't sort of in that nice sort of GPS-y clique. And as a result, he's just never really came through.
Well, what about cricket in Australia, which is not, and I think it's the same in India and South Africa, but is not the way in England, is that it's sort of a game for anyone, you know?
Yeah.
Like, everyone plays cricket, you know, whether it's backyard cricket right up to first grade or club cricket. Or like,
I think in India it's a bit like AFL in Victoria, in that there definitely are flash private schools that play it, and the guys from flash private schools are obviously have an advantage, but it is still a working person's game.
Yeah. And we'll get to, you know, how are Cricket Australia fuckwits this week.
I can't remember what the acronym is, but it's not what you said on Twitter. That was the Big Dog Goes to Bed version.
It was definitely the polite version.
It was the prime possum still in the tree.
Which they'd almost got through two whole weeks without doing something before they let's just jump onto that now because we seem to be skirting around the NBA. The guy that was in charge of one of the most monumental fuck-ups in Cricket Australia history, which was the negotiation of the wage deal.
The guy who was representing fucking Cricket Australia, he was the one leading the negotiations for Cricket Australia, to the point where Cricket Australia said, get rid of this guy and bring back the fucking proper CEO because this guy's a moron. He is now the CEO's 2IC.
with like, and the way that the article was coached, and Breding's such a good journalist that his sources would be spot on, is that he's going to be the successor. And you just sort of get the feeling this is a fuck you to the Australian Cricket Players Association. It's like, well, we've got rid of your two strongmen now in Smith and Warner. Watch us fucking come back at you hard. We're going to put this dude in charge. That and the fact that, you know, the Cricket Australia is basically now an advertising billboard for mining companies, which is going to age about as well as being an advertising board for cigarette companies, I would imagine. Yeah, they're just it'd be interesting to see whether Lemon pulls on that thread of the lack of competition leading, because English cricket, there was that really good piece that you tweeted out this week about England cricket, and you get exactly the same.
It was Marina Hyde in The Guardian, I think, where she was I think that was the one we were talking about, where you're talking about this absolute buffoon who's trying to push this 100 through.
Well, it's the same situation. Like, it's the same situation in all the cricket boards. The fact that you have no competition for your resource, like, you know, Kevin Peterson basically, like, he had a career, but he definitely did not have the career that he could have had if he'd been able to stay in that higher echelon in Test cricket.
Yeah.
The fact that you are basically the only game in town for your players, and you can do whatever the fuck you want to them and treat them however you want. What are they going to do?
You can limit their opportunity to earn, and you can limit their opportunity to play the highest level of the game, because you are the only way of them. Because national teams are the conduit to playing the highest level of the form of the games. Whereas in any, and that's not true of any other high level professional sport. I mean, everything else is in a club based or franchise based system. I can't think of a single other sport that's like that.
I would say rugby union still. There is more prestige playing for your national side, but...
But there's a lot of money. You can earn a lot of money playing for Leinster or fucking Munster or...
That's the thing. If you're Quade Cooper, say, and you don't get on with the coach, or you don't fit into the way that they want to run their program, it's fine. You go and play in the English Premiership and you make probably more money, less. And, you know... Maybe the next coach comes in, is a fan of you, and all of a sudden you're the golden boy come back. Like, and that married with the fact that cricket doesn't have an Adam Silver. It doesn't have an ICC that basically says, no, look, you guys are being fuckwits. You need to stop doing this. And the funny thing is, I think these sports have a big threat coming as the internet gets faster and everything becomes like, as the competition for people that are interested in sport, which is us, you know, like, once upon a time, our sport was local. Like, we sort of had to be interested in local sport, but now it's just so broad and it's becoming more and more so every day. And these guys just don't realize it. They don't realize that the NFL and the NBA and English Premier League and all these competitions are their competition. It's not just...
It's going
just...
to cut their lunch. And esports are going to cut their lunch. And fucking comic book movies are cutting their lunch. I mean, the fellow, Holmes of Court, who used to co-own Souths with Rusty Crowe, said this a long time ago, you know, probably one of the first or second years that he was running Souths, was, you know, Easts aren't our competition. Manly aren't our competition. Our competition is... going to the movies. Our competition is playing video games. That's actually what our competition is. And at the time, everyone thought, Jesus, what the fuck's wrong with him? But that's literally true. And that's going to be the problem with this sport, well, with all sports.
Okay, so this is like, and this is the thing that I think irritated me so much about this Gabba story this week, right, is some sports administrators and I don't know whether it's sports administrators or people in government, they sort of half grasp this concept, right? They grasp that entertainment is your competition. So, you know, if you are thinking about going to an AFL game at the Gabba, you could also go to the movies, or you could go to a live music venue, or, you know, you go to South Bank. You do a whole heap of things. But I think they're completely fucking missing the point about why you would go to the Gabba. Like, first of all, you go to the Gabba to watch good teams play sport well. Yeah. So you want, you know, you want a good Heat side and you want a good Brisbane Lions side and you want a good whatever.
Yeah.
And you want to be able to get it to those. Like, that is actually the product. The product is not fucking lights out the front. It's not a, like, you know,
and
used
the
to
product
go,
is something that's something you can't get from watching on television. It's a different experience. Yeah,
that,
it's a better experience.
That live experience. So I've told this story a million times, but my mate Tony Martin played a lot of rugby league in Northern England in
He's
a little
got a great
tiny
new podcast called Sizzletown. Not that Tony Martin.
I think that Tony Martin might have got snapped in half if he hadn't played rugby league.
Time trial form's not that great in the Giro.
Not that big. But he used to talk about the stadiums that they had there where, you know, the first row of fans could basically, you know, reach over and cuddle the linesman. But he said you'd have 4,000 or 5,000 people in and it would feel like Lang Park at a State of Origin. He said it was just amazing because they built the stadiums to – because they knew they were only going to get 10,000 people and they wanted to make it fucking loud.
And they were built for soccer so that they were the edges of the ground were much closer and the end goal was much shorter and it was much steeper.
Mm.
We have told this. This is about the fifth time we've told the story, but that's cool.
But the context of it is I don't think you need to know where the front door of the fucking Gabba is. What you do need to do is when it's a shit game and you want to get out quickly, you need to be able to get out of the place quickly and get to public transport and get the fuck away to the bars or home or the train station or whatever.
Still, you have the bars in the local precinct so that people don't want to go away. They come there hours before and they enjoy the precinct. I mean, like LA Live in LA where the Staples Center is, there's a whole string of restaurants around there in an area that was, you know, 15 years ago, it was a bit shitty. Lots of people would just go there for the restaurants and the cinemas and the pubs and clubs and venues, irrespective of the fact that there's a fucking multi-function venue there that hosts hockey and basketball and whatever else. That's the objective.
Well, you talk to some of the basketball journalists and they say the best basketball stadiums in America are the ones that are basketball stadiums, not multi-purpose venues, you know, ones,
yeah.
You know, so
you
that
can do a multi-purpose venue well. I mean, I think Staples Center is a pretty good example of that, but there's some that don't really work as well.
But like, I'm the last person to suggest a politician goes on a junket tour, but for fuck's sake, the Americans do this stuff well. There's been articles written about how, you know, the next wave of baseball stadiums is, you know, having character and being more personable and offering decent food and like there's a whole
cutter. They're not generic, they're not hose out plastic fucking hospital cafes.
I've never seen anything written about having a fucking light show out the front of your fucking stadium to keep people seriously.
That was the thing. I don't know whether you saw the plans that were released after the bid was pulled, but there was a Brisbane Strikers A-League bid that fell over through lack of finance. But their plan was to redevelop Perry Park, which is on Abbotsford Road, in sort of to the north of Brisbane CBD, and it's in a lovely spot, but it's a fairly rundown old joint. And they had lovely plans, and it would have been perfect. Bowen Hill Station across the road. It would have been a really nice kind of northern, sort of northeastern offspring of Lang Park, like a little Lang Park for soccer. And it would have been just about right. But, you know, it's kind of a shame that plan didn't really come to fruition.
Well, they need
fruition.
You know, they probably need something like that on the Ipswich or the Beenleigh lines for rugby league eventually, you know.
Well, I mean, there's 15, there's been 15 bids that have been launched for the two expansion sides in the A-League. There might be three slots if the Wellington Phoenix go under, or have their license taken away. But there's ironically, after all this talk of promotion relegation and how impossible it is to do in Australia, there's enough expansion clubs to have a second division if only it was economically feasible. But one of them is an Ipswich based franchise.
Oh, interesting.
So, but I don't think that's one of the ones that's near the top. I think the Melbourne ones are the Melbourne ones that are favoured on. only because
considering Ipswich doesn't have a council at the moment because the whole lot of them got fired for corruption, that might not have the foresight to go through there. Just that Gabba thing just really irritates.
Can you explain the Gabba thing for international listeners?
So, the big sort of cultural cringe and you make jokes all the time about how, Queensland's 10 years behind. Everyone makes jokes about Queensland. But this article is essentially the epitome of, oh, fuck, we lost the first test of the cricket summer. We need to spend millions of dollars upgrading the Gabba into this.
You mean the Gabba that was upgraded like 18 years ago for the fucking soccer world, the Olympics?
And
mind you, that was upgraded for Olympic soccer, and cricket and AFL got all the benefit from it, which is kind of shit.
The thing that really irritated me with the piece was, I'm not necessarily arguing that the Gabba doesn't need a refresh, but
It's fine.
They missed all the points of the things that you could actually do to make the Gabba experience better, which is,
better experience.
Suncorp Stadium is just amazing. You can pack shitloads of people in there very quickly. You can get a lot of people out into other parts of, we always talk about that,
that's all it's good at, though. It's good at the throughput. It's not a great match day experience. I mean, it's got the steep seats are fine, but the food and drink's crap and
that's an Australian thing where we just assume that we can treat people like crap and they're going to like it.
We just assume everybody wants Jetstar level service.
Yeah, everyone was raving about, the Perth Stadium was giving these rave fucking reviews, and then there's shittiest fucking food and drink.
$13 fish finger burgers, woo!
And you have amazing breweries, microbrewery, microbreweries, but, you could actually. And this is the thing about some of the – I come back to that competition factor where once upon a time you could run that line and most people would buy it hook, line, and sinker. But you and I think both far – is it Darren Revelle who tweets out –
he's the ESPN sports guy, but a lot of those sort of people – Richard Deitch, the media guy, often does this sort of stuff, sort of shows business around the sports.
Yeah, so every place he goes to the food stands and finds out what the specials are and what interesting, hyper-localized, some of these things are not just amazing, food experiences. And I'm sure they're overpriced. I'm sure they're just as overpriced as the fish fingers at Fremantle.
But if you're going to pay $13 for a fish finger burger, or you're going to pay $25 for a massive fucking gourmet mega burger, what are you going to do?
Yeah. Or something that actually highlights that ties it back into the locality of the place that you're visiting.
Well, that was the irritating thing about the Perry Park thing, was because they'd built into it like a microbrewery and a whole bunch of that sort of stuff. They'd clearly either seen or gone and talked to MLS clubs in the States where this sort of stuff is a fine art. You're like the Portland Stadium with its own brewery and all these sorts of things. It's exactly what gets people to go to sporting events, because if you just build a big, nasty, plastic-seated concrete box, no one is going to want to come. And then you've got no crowd, and then the thing looks shit on television, and the sport slowly chokes itself to death.
You know, I've always thought that the rugby league thing was amazing, where, rugby league is a pretty poorly attended sport
I've got the Canberra Manly game on in the background. It's not great. Cheers to Dan from the Sportress.
I hope he's okay. I hope that gym workout's going all right for him. They play 82 games a year, and so that means they're playing a lot of midweek games with a lot of clubs that aren't that good against clubs that aren't that good.
Yeah, I mean, half the league is below average,
and yet. The last time I saw attendance figure, the attendance figure for NBA games is at 92%. 92%.
For gyms that are usually kind of 15,000 to 20,000 seaters.
Yeah. So if you're a fan of Sacramento. And four teams, well, what are you coming for? You're coming for, okay, you're going to come watch whatever the visiting team is, but hey, you can get a nice beer and it's a nice, it's not going to be.
Because they've got a brand new stadium that's got all that shit absolutely on deck. They've got a Sierra Nevada fucking brew pub built into the stadium.
So like you can convince yourself, oh, well, you know, I'm probably going to go and watch our team lose again, but I can have a nice feed and a beer. Yeah. Whereas
I'm going to go and watch OKC when they're in town, and I'm going to go and see fucking Russ, and I'm going to go and see, you know, it'll be fun. And
yeah, I have not. But if you're the Reds and the Waratahs are visiting, and okay, I can get a 4-20 pie and a warm 4X gold in a cup.
Yep.
And it's great. Okay, or I could do anything fucking else, especially for me that lives out here.
Oh, you forget about it. But even if you're going to fucking Milton, there's like two fantastic brewery pubs just across the road, down Park Road. You can go to Ether or go to the fucking Scratch or something.
Yeah,
a much better experience than if you actually went to Lang Park.
Yeah.
So what we're saying is never go to live sport.
Look, I was talking to the guy that runs the PCYC today. Went to pick Curtis up and he was wearing a Bucks cap. And I said, "Are you into the NBA?" And he said, "Oh, yeah, I lived in Milwaukee for a while and my jaw just dropped." I said, "How long for?" He said, "Oh, a couple of years." I said, "Did you go to many games?" "Yep. Yeah, went to heaps of games. Saw Giannis, saw LeBron."
Oh, shit. Was not that long ago.
Saw Kobe's last game in Milwaukee. I was like, holy shit. So we sat and chatted NBA and whether whether Houston would be able to win without Chris Paul and whether, you know, Golden State could win without
How's it feel about Bud?
I didn't ask, but I pick Curtis up every day, so I definitely will be asking you about Bud, because I know Wheatman's pretty happy about Bud.
Yeah,
so
it's sort of quite confidence time for the Bucks. It's a little bit of positive in the future, which we can't stand for. You know, there will be no positivity. There's only misery. We've learned from Matt Moore of the action.
It's an Eastern Conference side, so
yeah. Mind you, the East was less trash than previous this year, and it's only going to get less trash too. Even if LeBron leaves the league, it's still. I mean,
I'm convinced that the East will eventually become better than the West. Looking at if you look at the Celtics, the Bucks, Philly, even
what a crap though. I mean, there's still a lot of Charlotte just have picked up the ex-Spurs guy, the ex-Spurs assistant, who looks good, but I mean, he can't do it on his own.
But there's just not that much there.
I mean, Orlando will always be. Oh no, he's in Orlando, isn't he? Is he Orlando or Charlotte?
Yeah, no, Charlotte.
I can't tell the fucking difference between Orlando and Charlotte. I mean, one's teal and one's.
I don't even know whether Orlando has a coach yet. I don't think they do.
I thought he'd gone to. No, I thought Borrego had gone to.
No, Borrego's definitely gone to. He's gone to Charlotte. He's already started filling out.
There's a couple of other Spurs assistants who don't have jobs yet, and I'm sure. I think at least two of them have interviewed for the Orlando job. So, good times for them.
Shall we talk about?
Should we talk about actual competent fucking
actual NBA?
Teams?
NBA. So, you know, I'm very pro-coach.
Yes, you're so pro-coach, you've basically got a Scania badge on your face. You're air-conditioned, and you've got a toilet on board. That's how pro-coach you are. You're so pro-coach, you're leaving Sydney tonight, and you're going to be in Brisbane in 36 hours' morning. Time. So pro-coach, you're hanging out at the petrol station in Karura at 3 a.m. for an hour for no reason that makes any fucking sense. There's a life I haven't lived for at least, you know, 20 something years.
Fast and stale ice break. Where was I? How much is it against Brad Stevens that he cannot get his players up for an away game?
We were dragging Steve Kerr for, well, I was dragging Steve Kerr for not being able to get his team up for two games in a row. But, I mean, his shit does not work outside the building, does it? He's 10-0 in these playoffs at home, and he's 1-9?
1-8? One game against the Bucks.
He won one game against the Bucks, yeah.
I guess the flip side of that is, if you're a really good home team, it's fucking good to have home court.
Well, if you've got home court, all you need is to win your home games. But that's that's a fairly perilous way to go about your business.
I guess the counter argument is it is a really young team, and young teams. I find home court really fascinating because home court's just not something that exists in touch football because
You're never home and it's not a court. Because the things you require for it to be home court, literally, it's the gym you practice in, and it's full of your fans. Neither of those two things apply.
Well, international stuff, there's some fans, like there's people that come and watch those games, but it's so one-sided historically. Like it's not really a factor. Like, and State of Origin is probably the only time where historically playing at home has mattered.
Do you get to play the touch games in front of the state? Are the touch games going to be played like as undercards to the NRL State of Origin, or is Piggy Riddell throwing himself on the train tracks to stop that?
There's a weird thing with that because...
With Piggy Riddell, yeah, it's his face.
Because Australian Touch sort of runs... Australian Touch, sort of the national body, runs everything in touch except State of Origin. The states run State of Origin a little bit, probably like Rugby League was... Well, probably still is, I think. I think the QRL and New South Wales Rugby League still sort of runs State of Origin.
I think it's all under the
partnership or whatever it is.
It used to not be because it had its own TV rights, because that's why Channel 9 had the rights to it in the 80s. And fucking Jack Gibson and Daryl Eastlake used to call it, which is where that famous 12th Man sketch comes from. Piss off Jack Gibbs on, you know, all that kind of terrible shit. That was because they were the callers of the game, even though Channel 10 had the rights to the New South Wales Rugby League. And I don't know who had the rights to the QRL because... I mean, we tended to try to avoid going to Queensland in that period because it was run by Joe Bjork Peterson, and he was a fucking fascist.
The ABC had rights to the QRL, I think, because I can remember one of my first memories is watching Wally Lewis play for Wynnum Manly in the Queensland, whatever, in the Queensland Rugby League.
I think it was just the Brisbane BRL.
I think
ABC had rights to a couple of games a week as well, because there used to be a game like Warren Boland would be involved in calling it on a Saturday afternoon or probably a Sunday afternoon. No, it was a Saturday afternoon game on ABC, much like they do, I imagine, Shoot Shield or something now.
So it drives me nuts because it is the perfect fit. Like you could play a three-game State of Origin touch series, you could, change your team.
This is the NBA part of the podcast, folks.
Like, you could do all of that, but they don't. But in club touch, there is, like, club touch is played all at the same venue. Like, we all play at White Hill. You have spectators, but not enough to influence the outcome, not enough to lean on a weak refereeing and push the penalty count in your favour or any of the sort of home court advantages that you get. So I've always been really fascinated by coaching against a home court advantage, like, because in the East at least it's proved pretty strong.
Well, and also it used to be a thing that a lot of the home court advantage would come about through the mechanism of 50-50 calls by the refs going your way. And in soccer, you can see how this would, because in other sports, when the crowd howls for something, you're going to look for it instinctively, and you've got to train yourself not to. But, if your crowd's howling for a free kick, you're going to be more likely to notice the fact that there's a free kick. A little bit like, when a player flops, you have to assess whether it was a foul or not. Whereas if they just carry on, they stumble and continue, you don't have a call to make, so you don't necessarily make that call.
Someone pointed out the fact that, Chris Paul sort of gets stuck into the referees a lot more at home than he does away, because, every time he gets stuck into a referee away, the crowd sort of, gives it to him, and the refs, subconsciously become more antagonistic. So whereas... the, you know, it's the opposite when, you know, the home crowd sort of, you know, the feeling is positive when Paul drawing to the ref. So even little things like that, I think make a big difference.
For sure. But it doesn't make, it doesn't, I haven't read anything that kind of digs into why in particular the Celtics are bad away from home, apart from the fact that they're young. But I mean, fine. That doesn't, I mean, that explains some of it. And a lot of what, a lot of what the Celtics do is hinged on, you know, defensive intensity and, you know, ball movement and fundamental shit that I'm not quite sure why that translates better.
Yeah, it doesn't.
Well, in the NFL, one of the things they say about the home field advantage is that the crowd knows to make a shitload of noise when the away team is on offense, because then they can't hear each other and they can't hear each other's signals, and they try to be as quiet as possible when their side is on offense, so that you know, obviously they can get their calls through. But I don't really feel like that's a thing. I think defensive and offensive signals are different in the NBA because your proximity is a lot shorter.
The absolutely. You'd think that there's no, that the Celts' defensive timing does not seem to be as sharp away.
Yeah.
You know, like they run some amazing defensive patterns when they're at home. You know, that switch the switcher stuff is just, I just love it. I just think, I can't wait to see how that plays out across the NBA. Where
did you read the same thing I read that was talked about, the idea that with everyone switching, some of the old school dark art stuff like posting up will actually become competitive advantage, because you're going to have more situations where you're going to switch into a mismatch where you can post somebody up.
Hmm.
Which is kind of interesting. I mean, obviously you're not going to have a big lumbering post up player in the modern NBA who isn't mobile enough to be able to play that kind of switch everything system.
So I got a bit of a theory that I want to throw out for you. I think rugby league
is trash.
It has become more boring as the type and shape of player has become more homogenized, right?
So I think that's broadly known, isn't it?
Well,
if you've got 50, yeah, you've got 13 players who are all basically the same bloke playing the same position, you have no variance.
So hardcore rugby league fans would disagree, but I was watching.
Yeah, but they cheer for the laundry. They don't cheer for the game.
True. So, you know, there's been quite a few, because Origin's coming up on Facebook, quite a few people have been posting, you know, 30-year-old Origin clips. And you look at the difference between the fullback, you know, you've got Marty Bella and Alfie Langer on the same field.
Yeah. Glenn Lazarus, or, you know, no.
Yeah, Lazarus, they barely look like the same species.
Yeah.
You look at the fullback or the winger or the center compared to the second rower now, and they're literally interchangeable.
I'm literally doing this right now, and with this Manly. As we speak, folks, you can timestamp this. Trent Hodgkinson is being marched for 10 in the bin. Trent Hodgkinson is the 5'8" of the Manly Football Club, Manly Warringah Sea Eagles. He has the body shape that could be in the second row, it could be centre, he could be fullback, he could be prop. They're all that shape, and there's no fucking difference. And that's the NBA is probably going to end up more like that. They're going to be a lot of rangy 9-foot wingspan dudes.
This is my thing, right? The NBA is a little bit more. It has a lot more power than the National Rugby League sort of head office does. You know, it's got the ability to look into the future and try and make decisions that will push the game in certain directions. And they've done this before with hand checking. You know, the illegal defense.
Really,
there's a whole
piece.
Heap of stuff.
Oh, sorry, just to butt in. Really good piece by the Kevins, Arnovitz and Pelton, on ESPN.com this week, talking about the evolution of pace in the NBA, how it was really quick in the 70s and 80s, and it slowed down in the 90s, and then the things that created this spike back up in pace, like the changing the rules in the early aughts to ban hand checking and that sort of stuff, the advent of 7 seconds or less, and of course, as we know, that Phoenix Suns team that obviously that you love so much would be about 19th on pace in, in this year's.
Fucking slow. Well, I was watching the highlights of that game today, and I could not believe how fucking fast that game was in terms of, like, the sort of accepted wisdom is if you aren't a really good transition defensive team, the best way to beat that is to make buckets because then you can set up your half-court defense. Mm. But, like, Houston was scoring and Golden State were getting the ball.
Are we talking about today's game?
Yeah, yeah.
That was not a fast game at all. Unless, I don't know what Bill you're watching, but there was a fucking grim slog through most of it. It was almost like it was 7 seconds or less, but the 7 seconds happened at the end of the shot clock.
Yeah, but the fact that they weren't, like, Golden State didn't seem to be walking the ball up at all. The ball would go through the basket.
No one was walking the ball anywhere.
They would sort of push it up 20, 30 meters up the court and run down to get into their sets. Like, it just didn't seem like there was much of a rest. I don't know whether the shots were that good because you look at the box score.
Everyone looked really tired today. And we could probably talk about the fact that how we got to here. So when we left you, it was 2-2 in both series, wasn't it?
Mm-hmm.
It couldn't have been. No, they'd only played 4 games. So it was 1-1 in the West, and it was 2-0, 2-2 to the Celts in the East.
That's right, because we were basically saying that the Golden State are done. You know, they're
I don't think we ever said Golden State are done.
No, like done as in they're into the finals because they've got home court back and you just cannot see them losing in home court.
Oh, yeah. Because at that stage, the Rockets hadn't really shown that much. I mean, they'd won a game, but they'd been at home. You'd like to think they would win a game. And the Cavs looked horrific. But then the Cavs got home and they suddenly stopped looking horrific because all the things that LeBron was doing was suddenly supported by other people doing things, like the fact that, you know, as I said on Twitter at the time, the LAN found its D, and suddenly, you know, J.R. Smith and Korver and even George Hill were starting to actually get some fucking points.
I think Korver's been pretty good, but the fucking Tyronn Lue's only given him 20 minutes a game. Like, it's just insane.
I don't know what kind of Nick Korver's in between the ears, though, because he lost his brother about 2 months ago, and they were a really close family. And Kev Love has been a very, very solid two, I see, to LeBron. In fact, there was a point there was a point in game 5 about halfway through the second quarter where non-LeBron and Kev players from the Cavs had scored a grand total of 1 point. But the Cavs won both their games at home and looked all right. You know, they're playing good D and they scrapping and looking all right. But then they went back to Celtic land and Tatum was Tataming and they just, it's almost like just like the Celts don't travel well, the non-LeBron Kev Love Cavs don't travel well. They just don't seem to give you anything.
Yeah. So my theory is I wonder whether the NBA is worried about the league becoming a whole bunch of 6'7 to 6'10 huge wingspan guys that are fairly mobile, that can switch everything and
can't shoot
that well.
Yeah, because that seems to be the problem, is that you can strike the genetic lottery and get the big wingspan and the ranginess and the being a fucking pterodactyl. But getting all that in somebody who can shoot is not, that seems to be a bridge too far. You're not going to get, 30 teams of 5 of those dudes.
Because when you get to the pointy end, if you've got a really good offensive player and like Curry's just above the break on this, like he's not a bad defender, but he's, and Harden too, like Harden's not, I don't care what you say. Harden is not a bad defender. He's not
a committed defender, though. I think that's one of the problems.
He's not a committed defender, but he's not super bad. But if you've got someone that's
for doing offensive stuff,
if you've got someone that's a really good offensive player, but he's just shithouse on defense, then they're not playable in a final series because they're just going to get hounded off the floor. So I wonder whether the NBA is worried about the league losing character. Losing the variance in body shape, and you know, you're not going to have the Shaqs and the Nate Robinsons in the same league. Maybe they don't care. Maybe don't they're just quite
that.
Happy.
I think they were worried about that. Even when Shaq was in the league, they were thinking, shit, you know, we're going to have a league full of Shaqs and there's never, and that's all there's going to be. There's just going to be unstoppable post play. The reality is there aren't that many Shaqs, you know, and it turns out to have been one. So I don't believe you're going to have that problem because I just don't think there's that many. I mean, what you're talking about is a league full of Giannis's and Simmons's and Embiid's. And so far we haven't found more than enough to have a Giannis, a Simmons, and an Embiid. And those guys always would have been playing in the NBA. And it's not like we've historically had them in the past. So this
is the real interesting thing about this draft, right, is you basically got a small forward. You know, you basically got a much better version of Joe Ingles,
but there's a couple of decent guards, isn't there? That's basically what we're looking at.
Well, Doncic is a small forward. He's not a guard. He's fucking 6'9".
He's listed as a guard in all draft documentation. And
really? He's not a fucking guard. There's no way he can play guard in the NBA. He's a small forward. He's like Ingles. A better Ingles is a great comp for him. I've watched a fair bit of footage on him actually the last couple of weeks. Maybe because my side could, but then after him,
shooting guard.
No, he plays small forward.
Are you gonna make me Google this button on fucking live?
He's a small forward. Mate, they start Donovan Mitchell, Ricky Rubio. He plays small forward.
How about this? None Joseph Howarth Ingles. Born 2 October 1987. He was born in Happy Valley. Which sounds like a fucking a place from Chuggington.
Sounds like...
He primarily plays at the shooting guard position, but is versatile enough to play the point guard.
No, he's a fucking... He plays small forward Wikipedia, for the Jazz.
It's science.
Fuck it. Bullshit. Let's send him a tweet and ask him, what are you, mate? Are you a small forward or a shooting guard?
Because Renee is
he's gone back to playing netball, which is awesome. But I get it, the point is not necessarily about Doncic, but the next sort of four or five guys in most draft big boards are all centers,
it's a very tall draft, and it's very it's very center centric draft. And those dudes are not shooters. They don't have any outside shooting. They don't have any, you know,
that's what they do. I think Ayton, the other guy that might go number one, is he's a bit cat like. He can stretch out to the 3-point line.
Yeah,
but
he licks his own ass.
But he's no Draymond Green. He can't switch nine different fucking positions.
Yeah, but neither Draymond Green wasn't Draymond Green when he came into the league.
No.
Again,
no, that's
really good
enough.
Piece on the by What Up Beck on the Draymond Green Steve Kerr relationship, which you know, while we in the lifetime of this podcast has gone from being he's going to get traded because they're screaming at each other to
they're best of mates.
Yeah. Dependent.
Amazing. I sent that to my co-coaches for my 18s team and said, this is a really good, because we've got a couple of kids we might pick up that have already been tagged with the, you know, prima donna problem child.
Yeah. The really important part about that, I think, was the fact that Kerr, it was Kerr changing, not necessarily Draymond changing. It was Kerr understanding, I've got to let him do these fucking dumb things, you know, from an analytics point of view. Because that's where he draws his power from. That's his, you know, that's the source of his fucking, you know, his unobtainium. That's what drives him. I've got to let him take bullshit shots in transition occasionally because that's what sparks, that's what lights him up. And Draymond telling Kerr to ease off Jordan Bell because Jordan Bell got in some shit for doing a dunk off the backboard late in a fucking blowout against the Mavs. Because Bell was trying to establish himself and understand who he was.
Well, it's interesting because I've always been a really big
dickhead.
Yeah, that's true. You know, you rock up But, you know, training starts at a certain time. So I don't give a fuck what you do before, you know, if training starts at 8 or 7 or whatever. Whatever the time is, you can do whatever you like, but at 7 o'clock when training starts, it's my time.
You belong to me, bitch.
Yeah, you'll be ready to go. But one of the things I learned from reading about the Warriors is, okay, that might be the case, but make it – you don't have to make the time – before you don't have to sort of be stalking around Tibbs style going, you cunts better be fucking ready to go at 7 o'clock or I'll fucking smash ya. You know, you
that's
can
more Tommy
let
Radonicus
them
than Tibbs, I think. I'm not sure.
You know, I mean, you can let them
Tibbs
have some
if he's
fun
not the
and
Tommy
keep
Radonicus of NBA basketball.
He is the Tommy Radonicus of NBA basketball. You imagine if those two got in a bar together, it'd be fucking sparks fly. It'd be the graveliest conversation in the history of fucking the world. You know, you can keep things light before you actually start. It doesn't have to be all business like all the time. You can have some fun and still be successful. And that was something that I had learnt. And I guess when you're coaching younger players, you've got to, like, if you're 18, you want to have fun. You don't, you know, you're not getting paid for it. It's not your fucking job. You still got to be able to have fun.
Yep.
Yeah, so back to the center thing. I think the fact that the Warriors have six fucking centers sitting on their bench that can't play a single minute of a game in the finals is worrying for the big guy. If you're going to be effective, well, then
Jesus,
you better be Embiid or Boogie Cousins or, you know, Anthony Davis or one of those guys. Good.
You need
otherwise,
another
you're
skill.
Just not going to be able to play.
Yeah, you need another skill. You can't just be big. Which is funny because whenever my dad sees any basketball, he's like, "Oh, they should raise the hoop higher because it's not fair. It's just too easy for them. But like, just have really tall people." It's like, no, it's not really.
It's all comparative.
That's not really how that works. Having tall people is not enough. Having little people, yes. Muggsy Bogues
and it doesn't matter.
In this fucking league.
It doesn't matter, like, you know, I thought that was funny how we're talking about, which I think is one of the endlessly funny things about the era discussion, which is, you know, which we were sort of both right about, which is Detroit would only have to smash Steph Curry like six times before he wouldn't be able to shoot anymore. But the flip side of that is Detroit never defended 35 feet from the basket. They never had to. You know, no one ran plays that far out. Steph would just pull up and just shoot with no one around him because they just weren't expecting him to shoot from that far out. If he ran a pick and roll, he might be in trouble because, you know, someone would probably murder him. But
sorry, you've completely cut out.
Oh, really? Am I back?
I've been, the last 5 minutes, I've been hearing like every third word, but
Oh, you would have just disagreed with you would have just disagreed with me anyway, so that's fine.
You can't even hear me, can you?
I can hear you. Look, we're not even talking about touching Piggy Riddell's spiked our wheel.
Right.
Hey, I do one thing I want to get on before
I
re-edit
it afterwards.
So, that's all right.
I was just going to say, we're talking about Game 5 of the East. We're still talking about the East. It almost felt like they were taking that as a scheduled loss because of the fact, and this comes down to the fact that the NBA have done something kind of dumb, which is they put that two, three-day gap after the first two games of both conferences, and then it's a game every second night for the rest. And they, like, all four teams look fucking beat up. They look knackered. And they could really do with a break right now. I mean, that game today was sloppy as shit. Because everyone just looks so fucking stagnant and tired.
It's funny, isn't it? Because the fact that these teams have gotten better means they go at each other harder. I know.
And the rotations are shorter. I mean, one of the reasons.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
One of the reasons
you,
the Rockets got pounded in that game three, I think it was, where the game where the Rockets got beaten by 40-odd, was that Kerr played around with staggering Durant and Curry. And that was just an unfaithful death machine.
If Chris Paul goes out, like they're already playing six guys, unless, you know, Mabuite's shoulder fucking comes good.
He's not a point guard.
What's D'Antoni? What's D'Antoni going to do?
It's not like they can get Austin Rivers.
No, like, I did like it. We give Hardwood Proxim a fair bit of shit about his nihilism on this podcast, but I did like his.
This is the funny thing. He started about, believing again. He was starting to like, this is fantastic. This is wonderful.
His tweet about how if D'Antoni coached the People's Republic of China, he'd still manage to whittle it down to a 7-man rotation. I thought that was
yeah,
that's
probably about right.
Anyway, so what's our predictions? I think the Celtics will win because I think they've got home court, and I think LeBron's too gassed to.
Well, now he took today off. LeBron. He took yesterday off, so he's fine. He only played 36 minutes, so.
Yeah, that's fine, but he'll have to go hardcore to beat him at home, and then he's not going. I don't think he's going to have the gas. Well,
it's game seven. I feel like he's waiting for game seven.
Yeah, I think he will have it, but I don't know whether J.R. Smith and Rodney Hood and Hill are going to have enough, and I don't know whether he's got enough left to cover the fact that they're going to play like shit.
Look, I think it's going to be the biggest game those guys have ever played in. It's also going to be the biggest game any of those Celtics guys have played in. And I know who if it comes down to who's going to have more poise in a game seven, I feel like LeBron's team of spares and ears and spares are going to be better off than your boy Genius's bits and pieces, just because
that crowd, like, as much as we think Boston crowd are a bunch of fuckwits, because they are, that crowd would be nuts though for a game seven.
True, but that can intimidate you as the home crowd too.
Yeah, that's right. You can feel the pressure. And I think Richard Jefferson said that today on The Jump. He said there's a difference between a home crowd in a game one and a home crowd in a game seven, because you can feel the pressure to you know, make them happy. Yeah.
And you can make them anxious too. You can suck the air out of the building.
Yeah, hello Toronto.
That's a perfect example of how an anxious crowd sucked the energy out of a team.
And I wonder whether Kerr gambling by not bringing Iggy back too quick might have actually played off, because if he's got a healthy Iggy for the next, or not healthy Iggy, but if
playable
Iguodala
Iggy.
If he can play the next two games, and you know they're going to play Chris Paul in Game 7 no matter what, unless he cannot walk.
The last word Chris Paul told Chris Haynes this evening that he's okay for Game 6. Which
you have a tweak to hamstring.
Well, the other thing is that Chris Paul has been looking gimpy all series, particularly in that 41-point game. He looked like shit. So I think it comes and grows. And there's always been this kind of lazy narrative on the Twitters that, you know, as soon as like Steph Curry starts playing well, people go, he's not injured now. And it's like, no, when you're carrying something, you can play well for a bit, and then you're not playing well for a bit. It's not like doing year 9 physics calculations and friction is set as a certain fucking fraction.
No.
It comes and goes. You try and do certain things, it hurts. You try and do other things, it doesn't.
I've had syphilis. Calf strains. Like, I don't do hamstrings much, but I've had quite a few calf strains. Like, not tears. Like, because once it's torn, it's gone. You know, you don't...
Yeah.
You can feel it. You don't do anything.
It's popped.
But where you've had those strains... Yeah, you have a calf strain, you go for a run, or you go and play Game of Touch, and you know, you ease yourself into it, and it gets warm, and it feels good, so you up the level, and then all of a sudden it's like, you know, I can't go at that second, I can't go at that next level. I can go for a jog, I can go for a nice cruisy run, but I cannot push, you know, I can't finish hard.
It's like a throttle stop, it's like an air restrictor, it stops you going... Yeah. Above a certain level. It's like the governors they have on semi-trailers on the highway. And you only go up to 90. They can go up to 90. That's no problem. They can't go 93. You know, that's where they stop.
Yeah.
That's where the shit runs
out. And the other thing is, the other thing with those is, like, and I'm a classic example of it, like, coming back, you try and do too much. You know, you don't sort of restrict yourself enough, and you go and push that little bit more, and it's really easy to re-injure. Yep. Like,
Because it doesn't heal properly, it's so scary and
yeah, it's so hard to find that level where you can just play within yourself and you're not going to damage it further. And all of a sudden, you know, you come off a pick and roll and you've got to accelerate into the layup and there goes your fucking hamstring again. So there's so many fascinating facets to this, to the way this series
is. And how fatigue has come and gone. I mean, in my notes for every single Western Conference game, every single Western Conference game I have, the notes begin with CP3 looks gassed. CP3 looks like trash and Harden looks gassed. They're doing sloppy, desperate drives through densely forested fucking paint, just chucking up rubbish. And those were games they won in the end. It was just
and then you've got Durant, like that game at home.
Oh,
like,
the game where Bill Simmons reanimated the shambling corpse of hashtag KD ain't clutch.
Well, what did he miss? 4 3-pointers? Did Curry take a 3-pointer in that last quarter?
Was it the one where he also passed up the last shot?
Apparently, because
as we know on old white guy fucking NBA Twitter, or even just old guy NBA Twitter, passing up the last shot is still a capital crime.
I do sort of, it's a little bit funny. I've been watching Westworld and listening to, you know, like basically a conspiracy podcast because that's the sort of show it is. It's part of the enjoyment. And someone
are you going to start fucking building a bunker? Is that why you've got all those shipping containers?
I do not have any shipping containers much to my
preparing.
Much to look, my dream goal for this podcast is to be sponsored by a shipping container company. That's what I want. shout out to any shipping container companies out
there. Shout out Raw Wolf. It's
the only one. Raw Wolf, yes. I would fucking love this podcast to be sponsored by Raw Wolf come at me. I will fucking podcast. I will pimp the fuck out of your shipping containers if you sponsor this
An empty
podcast.
Vessel makes anyway. The most noise. And God, you can make a lot of noise with a Raw Wolf shipping container.
Fuck, that would be... Look, it would be worth it just to hear us doing ad reads,
I
reckon.
The echoing void.
But the theory that Durant sort of diminishes the impact of Curry is not that crazy.
Curry voluntarily diminishes himself because KD.
I don't necessarily think it's all KD's fault. I think Curry is the sort of guy that's like, well, you know, we've got one of the best two players. Like, if LeBron came and played at the Warriors, he would do the same thing. If Westbrook came and played at the Warriors, he would probably do the same thing. He's just
basically the same position. Because I think Curry identifies that Durant can do stuff that Curry can't do. But in theory, all the stuff Westbrook does, Curry can do. I mean, he doesn't drive as well.
Yeah.
But those
third quarters that he's had.
Third quarter dubs haven't really been third quarter. Like the Rockets holding serve against third quarter dubs has been a big thing in the last couple of games. But yeah, continue. Not to sound like Ethan Sherwood's case, but continue.
But Curry's had a couple of big third quarters, but he used to have whole games like that. Do you know what I mean? Like he would come out and hit a 3-pointer from, you know, in the second minute, and it'd be one of those, like I can remember flicking between games when one of the kids was sick, you know, on those days where you'd have like 9 games in a day. Yeah. And, you know, if the Warriors were playing, I'd always watch the first 3 minutes because if Curry hit 2 3-pointers in the first 4 or 5 minutes, it's like, right, that's it. I am sticking with this game because it is fucking on and it's going to be over by halftime, but it's going to be a wild ride till halftime. But that Curry seems to come and go now.
Well, I think in the conference finals that it's, you know, your opportunities for it to come
harder
are different as well. I mean, he got 17 points in the third quarter of game 4, which was a game that the Rockets looked like they were going to lose, but then they just came smashing back and ran them down. It was a little bit reminiscent. That was the first good game of the finals because it was a bit reminiscent of 2016 when there were these very competitive series. But none of the games were actually any good. You know, they were all 20-point blowouts either way until the final, like the game 7 was good.
And that's what made me think of it because that was exactly the sort of game pre-Durant that Curry just would have taken over the fourth quarter as well. But instead, Durant took most of the shots in the fourth quarter. most of which came off Curry feeds. You know, yeah. good looks. They were good looks, but...
And he's the point guard. That's his fucking job. I mean...
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And like Durant's a pretty fucking handy three-point shooter. They're not shots that you don't want him to be taking, but he just didn't hit any of them. So
his hashtag, he ain't clutch. Just ask his regular pod partner, Bill Simmons, hurled him under the bus, which was classy.
I just want to finish with... look, we're not the biggest AFL sort of spruikers on this podcast, but...
Look, I'd like to put forward a segment to finish the show off today entitled Things That Can Fuck Off. And I think we're probably on the same page. I haven't even guessed what you're going to talk about, but things that can fuck off. What can fuck off this week, Bezo?
So the AFL Women's Right is this awesome, it's an awesome competition. It's a fucking fantastic battle for the hearts and minds of women that are interested in sport.
Women's sport is going to be the next like participants and watchers. It's going to be the next big dollar professional sport battleground. And it's ridiculous that it's taken this long to be part of it, but between AFL, cricket, netball and football, soccer, those are going to be the sports. And you'd think football are the least organized, but they do have the biggest star in the world, which is Sam Kerr.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I'm seriously thinking about $17 for WNBA League Plus.
I watched the first quarter of the Sun versus the... The Chine and her sister...
I saw that.
But she's really good on as an NBA analyst. And she's and also is the fucking starting center for the Connecticut Sun.
Like my club actually has a pretty decent WNBA side, so I'm maybe interested in the WNBA. But I guess what I'm trying to say is I don't want to put it as just a booster for the male sport. But if you're interested in a sport, it is critical that you support the female version of your sport. You know, it's pretty fucking basic marketing. You know, don't shut them out. Don't minimalize them. Don't fucking push them off to the side and go, here you go, little girl. You can have your little space over here and we're not going to help you. So the first thing that you should fucking do is if there are capable women coaches in your sport, they should be coaching AFLW teams. Yes. And then those women coaches should be in the AFL coaching boxes, even if they're sitting in the back, just to sit there and learn. They should be learning it with those coaches because they are part of that fucking club.
And you're shutting yourself off to fucking 50% of the potential candidates who are capable of doing your job. Because you don't need to have played AFL football to coach AFL football. And anybody who believes you do is from the fucking 1970s.
No, you need to be a good coach. Yes. But the fact that if your AFL women's side, like if it's the Brisbane Lions AFL women's side, they're wearing your colours, they're wearing your name, it's up to you to develop those coaches. So, look, you don't have to, you know, fucking put them in the front seat and basically make them your co-coach, but put them in the fucking box and let them learn. You know, I cannot believe that they had two very capable women's coaches and they just pushed them out of the fucking game.
But do you know why they pushed them out of the fucking game? So that they could find a way of hiding the salaries of their expensive assistant coaches from the AFL side. Because there is almost like a backroom staff budget that the AFL men's teams have to adhere to. And by moving these guys across from being, say, the ruck coach to being the AFL women's coach, it gets them off the books. And that's basically what's motivating this. It's incredibly cynical and pathetic. But again, the women's game is being sacrificed to the men's game.
And shout out to Sam Lane, who loves AFL, the men's game, but isn't here for this bullshit and is not going to fucking, you know, take it lying down. And this is the sort of journalism that I love, which is, it's just like, no, I'm not, you know, I may be fucking, The next time I walk into a change room in an AFL men's club, you know, St Kilda or Fremantle, which were the two clubs mentioned, maybe I'm going to get a bit of side eye, but I don't give a fuck. This is my job. My job is to point out bullshit when I see it, and this is bullshit. It's absolute bullshit is what it is.
It can fuck off. You know what else can...
Keep
going. Well, we've got a good signal.
We hold up the fact that the, you know, that the NBA are considering a woman as their, you know, having a woman head coach one of their sides for the first time in the NBA.
It's not the NBA. It's not like a league-wide initiative. It's a team that's looking for a competitive advantage and looking to hire the most qualified and best candidate possible.
Coach.
Who happens to be Becky fucking Hammond. And the reason that is because she's been trained up.
Legend.
She had the raw talent to be a good coach as a player and as an assistant coach, and that talent was fucking activated by having faith put in her by a club. And if you don't do that as an AFL club, you're not going to have a generation of Becky Hammonds coming through who have the opportunity to go and coach men's footy, because secretly they don't want that. But I want to have
women. Well, that's the thing. What if the next Malthouse is a woman?
What if it's
Chrissy?
How
the fuck do you know? I don't
think Malthouse's daughter is going to be a coach. I think she's happy on telly.
Yeah, but like the fact is that so there is certain personalities, I believe, that are just good for coaching. And to shut off half of the population is just fucking nuts. It really is.
Well, the equivalent in my sport, if I'm going to be that grand, the equivalent of coach in motor racing is basically the chief engineer, the lead engineer on a race car.
Mm.
And women have often been and are often the lead engineer on a race car, because you need to be analytical and tactical and aware, but you also need to be able to be motivational, and you need to tell race drivers to pull their fucking finger out or motivate them when they're down, or all those sorts of skills are required for that kind of position. And there's absolutely no reason women can't do that. And you don't need to have won the Formula One World Championship to be able to be a great engineer.
Yeah.
A great race engineer.
That probably wouldn't help.
Well, yeah, because you'd think you had a better idea.
The skill set that lets you do that is probably not going to be the skill set that lets you,
Old Wally Lewis / Diego Maradona case, where you think you can do a better job than they can, and they're fucking Muppets because they don't have the level of skill that you had.
Yep. And then you go and do it, and you're like,
"No, I'm washed.
This is not that fucking easy." anyway.
Things that can fuck off. That can fuck off.
Yeah.
Marvel Stadium can fuck off.
Oh, really?
Marvel
fucking
Stadium. The Disney have signed a deal with Docklands for the former Etihad Stadium, which is, I believe, is owned by the AFL, which is why it can fuck off, to be sponsored by Marvel, makers of comic book movies. So that'll really enrapture fans of comic book movies. I had a bit, man.
Comic book
Get
movies.
Get out of my fucking
banks.
Bit.
Banks, airlines, what does it matter? It's just a fucking...
And that'll fucking enrapture fans of milquetoast corporate bullshit packaged and sold to gormless peons. And you can figure out whether I'm talking about comic book movies or AFL football there, whatever you like. Yes. The Milwaukee Police, they can fuck off. Fines for kneeling during the anthem can fuck off. David Koch can fuck off, and he's fucking, we were the first league to play a game in China that was for actual points. You don't fucking matter to China with your piss-ant AFL game that no one would have turned up to in Australia. Linton can fuck off. We told them to fuck off. The NHL can fuck off, because if you've got an expansion club that didn't want to win making your final, you're pretty shit. AB de Villiers has fucked off. Thanks for the memories, guy. Real Madrid can fuck off. They're going for their third... Champions League in a row, and we don't really want that. Interesting piece on the I've signed up for an Athletic subscription because they've got a deal on.
You bit the bullet.
Because they've launched this a soccer thing with a whole lot of really good soccer writers, and they were offering like an extra 33% off. So I got on that, and there was a good piece by Michael Cayley, I think, talking about how Real Madrid are weird because they're one of the few big European clubs that don't play a very high-pressing style like a Liverpool do, Although Liverpool themselves have kind of dialed back the pressing a little bit. Pressing, you know, where you lose possession, your forwards fucking really pressurise the opposition defenders to try and win the ball back straight away. Madrid don't do that, mainly because their forwards are guys like Cristiano Ronaldo, who can't be fucked with anything like defending, because that's like hard work, and he might chip a nail or something. But hopefully Liverpool will tear them a new arsehole. Elsewhere, Aston Villa are going to play Fulham in the richest game in the known universe, the promotion playoff for the Premier League. And I saw that your club is being bought into by the owners of the San Francisco 49ers, who are not completely terrible, so that's not a bad thing.
Well, I have to say that the worst thing about this NFL kneeling thing is that I have to admire a New York side. It makes me feel icky.
Well, this is weird, because it was the boss of the New York Jets said, you know, if any of our players get fined, we'll mop that up. And the irony is,
yeah,
this guy Christopher Johnson, his brother is Woody Johnson, who's in Donald Trump's cabinet, which is remarkable, you know. But it's good to see. I don't know. Maybe he doesn't get on with his brother. But his brother was previously part of the ownership group before he fucked off to hang out with Donnie. Yeah. Who else can fuck off? Red Bull haven't fucked Dan Ricciardo yet this week. They're fastest in early practice. But that's probably because they need Dan to re-sign.
We should hold it. Next year we'll have to have a season tally, you know. Cricket Australia fuck-ups versus Red Bull Dan Ricciardo fuck-ups, and see who wins by the end of the year.
We'll see what it is. And finally, Elon Musk can fuck off.
Yeah. He can fuck right off.
He went after a friend of mine, and I don't take too kindly to that, so fuck him.
If you don't know what that's about, Google it, because it's pretty obvious that he's a
complete chode hat,
frustrated frat boy,
just the worst kind of douche nozzle. He was prattling on about how he was going to start a Yelp review site for news, which is the worst idea in the world.
Yeah, that'll go well.
The entire internet just said there's a fucking terrible idea, including my friend Upali Devasekara, who's the how do I put this?
Co-founder
of Real Scientists, and the other founder remains anonymous. I wonder who that was. we don't talk about this much on this podcast, but this podcast might not have ever happened, because there was a plan at one stage. I don't think I'm talking out of turn here, for the equivalent of this podcast to be me and Upali talking about science. Imagine how fucked that would have been. Aren't you glad?
Hey, Stargazing Live is a big thing. Well, you might have been the Stargazing Live of the podcast
world. Don't
get
me started on fucking astronomy in science communication. Because here's the thing. Astronomy gets a free kick in science communication because nobody's scared of it. It doesn't affect anybody's lives. So anyone can be interested in it. When it comes down to fucking anything involving biology, anything involving genetics, anything involving the human environment,
climate change,
then it gets political, then it gets resource-based, then there's fucking judgments that have to be made. But anybody can enjoy fucking staring up at the stars, because it doesn't make any fucking difference to your life. So you can have this very superficial buzz look at the stars. Great. It's the kick of science communication. Good for you if you're doing science communication with the stars.
Until the atmosphere gets so polluted that we can't see the stars.
Then it gets political. Anyway, fuck that guy in the face with a chair. And I'm going to use the line again, because I'm so proud of it. I'm not being fucking lectured by a man with a name like a fucking brand of deodorant that's been marketed to incels.
See you, Doc.
Thank you.